Well, good morning, everyone. It is Sunday morning, June 24th. Time is 8:14 a.m. Eastern Time. Pastor Sean Harris coming to you from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I've got a story uploaded to sermonaudio.com that we're taking a look at this morning. It was posted Thursday, June 21st, 2012. I saw it today for the first time. It's called thechurchreport.com. And then the title is, As Churches Get Political, IRS Stays Quiet. Pastor Jim Garlow will stand before congregants at his 2,000-seat Skyline Wesleyan Church in Las Mesa, California, on Sunday, October 7th, just weeks before the U.S. presidential and congressional elections, and urge his flock to vote for or against political candidates. He knows such political pleading could endanger his church's tax-exempt status by violating IRS rules for 501c3 charitable organization. A charity can take a position on political issues but cannot act on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. To cross that line puts the 7 million mega-churches tax break at risk. Even so, Garland not only intends to break the rules, he also plans to spend the next 4 months recruiting other pastors to do the same as part of Pulpit Freedom Sunday. Pulpit Freedom Sunday. On that day, each year since 2008, ministers intentionally try to provoke the IRS. Some even send DVD recordings of their sermon to the agency. Last year, 539 pastors participated. This year, organizers expect far more. Participants want to force the matter to court as a freedom of speech and religion issue. I believe we are on the early stages of the next great awakening, Garlow told his congregation last year. We're going to see it just sweep across this nation. The situation is fraught with peril for the IRS, which needs to be seen as apolitical when it cracks down on political activities prescribed by the 501c3 regulations it inevitably branded as partisan. Now, I'm sorry I failed to mention to you the author's name. I don't see it. Let me see if it's in the end. No, it does not have the author's name. That's unfortunate. Again, I'm reading a story from Christian Report, ChristianReport.com. I had no idea that there was such a Sunday out there called Pulpit Freedom Sunday. I did not know that there are pastors out there doing everything they can to provoke the IRS to sue them, or to, I guess the IRS wouldn't sue them, but to punish them so that they can sue back, I guess maybe is a better way of saying it. At issue, according to the article, are billions in tithes, and a huge amount of money in property tax revenues. According to Politics, Taxes, and Pulpit Law professors Nina Kreim and Laura Weiner calculated that houses of worship received $12.7 billion in property tax exemptions on $685 billion worth of property. So the question becomes, what should we think of this? And by the way, it's not just Protestants. At the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops meeting last week in Atlanta, bishops vowed to keep up their criticism of the Obama administration policies on employer-provided birth control and controversies. The first principle is that American citizens do not lose their freedom of speech or their freedom of expression when they become bishops, said Cardinal Francis George of Chicago. As to what is and is not acceptable to say about candidates for office, the guidelines are broader than some may interpret them, George told Reuters at the conference. In follow-up email correspondence, he declined to say whether he thought the IRS rules constrained freedom of speech or whether he would be willing to forego the church's tax exemption so clerics could speak out without restriction. Well, there's a little bit of a difference here because he cannot speak for the entire Catholic Church, whereas Pastor Jim Garlow evidently has the congregation's backing or his board of elder or trustees backing on the risk that he is intentionally taking with his congregation. There is a specific reference in the article to another church that did in fact lose its tax-exempt status, and what that church did is it just changed names and moved to a new location and then had its status back again. Well, this is a very difficult issue. And the reason I say it is a very difficult issue is because we must decide to what degree are Christian pastors expected to obey the laws of the land, and to what degree should they obey God over man? And who finds that balance, and where is that balance? Evidently, Jim Garlow is very comfortable with ignoring what the law says. Perhaps God has led him. Perhaps God has led him very specifically, and he is assured that God is using him to make a change in America, such a change that pastors would get greater freedom to speak on political matters. Maybe that's why he is intentionally ignoring the law and putting his church's tax-exempt status at risk. Certainly, I would agree wholeheartedly with Garlow's premise that pastors need to speak to these issues, in spite of the fact that the article intentionally calls to our attention that, according to the Pew Research Center, only 18% of those polled want their minister, priest, or rabbi to be involved in communicating political matters. A second Pew study this spring found that most parishioners would prefer their religious leaders steer clear of electioneering, with Catholics among the most adamant. Well, I would submit to you, just my thought, that those Christians who have the least of a biblical worldview and the application of that biblical worldview would be the most adamant in asking their priests, rabbis, and ministers to stay out of politics, whereas those parishioners who most clearly have a biblical worldview would probably understand the necessity of their pastor speaking to cultural matters and communicating perspectives and communicating where leaders are sinning. When we consider the role of the Old Testament prophet, we find that he spoke against the sins of the kings and the judges and the leaders very specifically, primarily the kings, and would call out the sin that he saw in the nation. One must question the degree to which pastors no longer see that as their role, and the degree to which pastors see themselves as moralistic, therapeutic counselors who speak with very little specificity on Sunday morning to cultural issues and the direction of the nation. And we can think of mega church pastors all over the United States who refuse to delve into the controversial issues. Yet, we see the prophets of the Old Testament doing just the opposite. And the balance is we see the apostles focused on the gospel of Jesus Christ and planting churches. And I think therein lies the tension. therein lies the tension, is the looking at the Old Testament prophet and his role as God's spokesman, and then studying the New Testament apostles and looking at their focus, and then somehow trying to find the balance between the two. Because certainly the early church was not picketing, was not holding up banners and protesting the Roman Empire. Why weren't they? Because the Roman Empire was killing them. But in America, there's very little fear that the government's going to kill you for taking a stand. So then one must ask, with the freedom we have and the right to vote and the Constitution that gives us the ability to petition our government, where that is in fact lawful, one must ask themselves the question, why aren't we doing it more? Well, thanks for listening. Kudos to Pastor Jim Garlow of the Wesleyan, Skyline Wesleyan Church. I don't think I'll be participating. I'm not so led to put the church's tax-exempt status at risk. I'm not so led to ignore the law like he is. But I respect where Jim's coming from. And if God was to so impress that upon my heart, then I would seek the will of the people, because we do have congregational government at Brian, and then pray and earnestly see where God's leading. At this point, he's not, but we will continue to speak boldly within the limits that the 501c3 rules permit us to. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Send me your thoughts and comments at pastoratbbc@gmail.com.